Jim Allister with us this morning. Sinn Féin have told us, by the way, that if we want them representative, we should take a clip of what they said yesterday about this matter. We will not be doing that. Morning to you, Jim. So this initiative from Naomi Long to try to get the parties together, will you be going on Monday?
No, I won't, because it's an invitation to return to failure. You know, it's very, very clear. The present system has failed, and yet there is this clamour to get back to that which has failed. Instead of addressing the source of the failure, namely the system of government, and we're in this mess because of mandatory coalition. A mandatory coalition means that every party as of right is entitled to be in government, and therefore any party of sufficient size can hold the rest to ransom, and that's why we've had the policy.
And you've been saying this for years, but how would you deal?
And every day that goes by vindicates what I say, because the failure is the politics of ransom, and the politics of ransom arises from mandatory coalition. And unless and until we fix that and get to a system of a coalition of the willing, then we're never going to have devolution at work. So anyone who's clamouring for return to failure is of no interest to me.
So how would you deal with the statistics that I gave out a matter of moments ago, that 60% of those people voting in an election, the last election, voted for DUP or Sinn Féin? You cannot airbrush that significant 200,000 people out.
But I'm not going to stand by and have airbrushed out of the discussion the fact that the system to which people wish to return is a system incapable of working. And it doesn't work for one very simple reason. Sinn Féin is not in business to make Northern Ireland work. And therefore, when you create a system which only allows government, if they are at the heart of government, if government can only exist by their grace and favour, and they don't even want the country to exist, then government is never going to work. It's pretty simple. And unless we change the structures of government and move to voluntary coalition, then we're never going to get devolution that works. And since we can only get government either from Stormont or from Westminster, and we patently aren't getting it from Stormont, and I see no appetite from Naomi Long or the DUP or anyone else to change the structures of Stormont, then we need to get it from the only place we otherwise can get it.
So the 450,000 votes between Sinn Féin and the DUP, how should those people be represented in your world, Jim?
Well, in my world, we'd have a structure of a coalition of the willing, where you'd have your election, you'd come together, no party's big enough to form a government on their own, they negotiate what they want to do about it.
So you want devolution, do you? I thought you wanted direct rule.
I want devolution that works. I don't want this form of devolution, which will never work.
And but you do want devolution.
I want devolution that will work, but it can only work on a voluntary basis. It will never work on a mandatory basis. If we can't get an appetite to fix this system at Stormont, this Stormont is not worth saving. Unless we can fix it, then it's not worth saving. And if we can't save it, then we can only get government from Westminster. And the Secretary of State, instead of being a perpetual feet-dragger, should get on with it and give us government from the only place it now can come from. Because we do deserve better, but we don't deserve to go back to the failure of the past. We deserve a system that works. If we can't get that, then get it from the only place that we can get government presently, which is Westminster. And Secretary of State, get on with it.
Well, Dylan Quinn, you're one of the organisers behind this campaign. You've heard Jim Allister there rubbish the whole point of doing it.
I haven't really heard Jim rubbish the whole point of doing it. I think what he's talking about is the structure of government. What we were doing was engaging the community and demonstrating their frustrations at the lack of government here and the lack of political leadership here. So I think they're kind of two different things. My experience last night and my experience over the last few weeks has been hearing people's voices about how frustrated they are at the fact that we don't have political leadership here that is moving forward.
But Dylan, with respect, are they frustrated at having no government, or are they more frustrated at the state of the country? I'm not sure that the two are the same. You could argue that they are frustrated at the state of the health service, at the state of the prospect of the uncertainty over Brexit, at the state of business, etc., etc. That doesn't necessarily need this local crop of politicians to fix it. Two different things, surely.
I think they're frustrated at all of the above, and I've heard along the way, I've heard people who have been diehard voters from both sides say that they're either not going to vote next time or they're going to be looking elsewhere. People have stopped me while out shopping in order to say that, while walking down the street in order to say that, because they are so frustrated. And that's, I think, what the parties need to start to hear, is that people will start to look elsewhere if they're not going to get the leadership that they require from the
Do you really think so?
Establishment. I don't think it's going to be an overnight thing to happen, but I think over time, the more we engage civil society in understanding how powerful they are and that the power actually sits with them, and that's what this was about. I don't have the power to change the structure of Stormont, or nor do I have the experience of doing it. That's not what I'm here for. The MLAs are supposed to be paid to do that. I was trying to engage the community in understanding and appreciating the power they had and demonstrating that in a colourful and creative way that was saying, we want better leadership here because we deserve better here. And then that's up to the people who are paid to do those jobs in order to do that. And currently they're being paid and they're not doing those jobs.
But they have
to step up to the mark.
But the DUP and Sinn Féin are being sent a very clear message from their electorate. That's why they have 450,000 votes between them, Dylan.
I think the DUP and Sinn Féin are being sent various different messages from the electorate. As we well know, some people here will continue to vote because they're voting somebody out, not somebody in. And that's because of fear and because of experiences of the past. And it's very complicated. It's not straightforward here in terms of why people vote. And they need options. We need other options in doing that. But that doesn't mean that people aren't frustrated. That doesn't mean that over time people aren't going to look elsewhere. And even past that, both Sinn Féin and the DUP have to start to look beyond their own tribal politics and start to look at how we actually solve the issues that we have here. So we have good governance and we have a good community and we look forward.
You're talking about frustrated people. I want you all to hear a lady called Wendy Crawley. Wendy's a grieving mother. She attended the rally in Bangor yesterday, and Wendy told those in attendance how her dying daughter was forced to spend 24 hours in an overwhelmed A&E ward.
My last visit to A&E was 24 hours. There was no bed. There was 7 hours waiting to get a blood sample analysed. There was another several hours to see a doctor. They couldn't get an MRI scan because it wasn't there or available. She sat all night on a chair with other people very ill. She was paralysed on her left hand side. She was in pain. It was inhuman. Do you all know how bad it is? Because if you take ill, that is how our health service functions. And £9 million, I believe, in salaries might have got her at least a bed for the night.
Thank you. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's the first time I've heard that, Alex Kane. That's blown me away.
I heard that last night, Stephen. It is, you know, as a dad myself, and any parent, any brat, you hear something like that, and it is actually upsetting. But it's no comfort to her, to Wendy in this case, Stephen. But I'm not at all sure. I'm not convinced it would necessarily have been much better had we had the executive running. That the problems in the health service in Northern Ireland go way back, long before January 2017 and the collapse of government and so on. There were huge, the waiting lists were growing, lack of funding, all sorts of problems. We had reason to deal with the health on a personal level, but with the health service on a very private, personal matter, in a family matter, and a number of years ago. And they were telling us horror stories, and the staff were telling us horror stories about getting people booked, getting appointments, getting equipment that actually worked properly. So, you know, Wendy's right in one sense. I mean, it's a huge issue that needs to be addressed. It's not going to be addressed without the government. We need that government. But and Bax, I don't know if Dylan's still there when
he is.
Well, Dylan's point. Now, I have a lot of sympathy about them too. And you know, even though I'm pessimistic, I've said, look, we need change in Northern Ireland. For years, I've said, look, if you're sick to death of the system, then I'm sorry. The only way around it is you vote for something different. The reality is, Stephen, we don't vote for something different. Sinn Féin and the DUP have gone from 33%. To 60%. Dylan says he's stopped by people saying, diehard voters from both sides said, oh, well, if this, we're going to change something. It never happens, Dylan. I've seen this over 40 years. It never happens. If all the opinion polls, all the statistics, all the anecdotal evidence had been true over the past 20 years, the DUP and Sinn Féin would barely be getting 10 MLAs between them. The reality is we are polarising.
And though, Alex, you say that. You look at how politics changed ever so quickly in America. You look at how Trump, for example, swept in. You look at some of the radical re-voting, some of it not very palatable, according to some, that has happened in Europe over recent years. Politics can change pretty quickly under a momentum, often from a youth vote.
Yes, it can. I'm not denying that. I've said that. That's one of the reasons I used to argue that when people said, oh, there could never be anything different, I said, well, there can be. If you take in the 20% or so people, more than that, up to 30 sometimes, who don't bother voting, if you take in the new generation that's come in before, you know, say from 1990, this is a figure, if you even look at the growth of the electorate in the past 40 years in Northern Ireland, there's reason to believe that given the right circumstances, something would change. I'm simply saying, for reasons I cannot completely understand, Stephen, we haven't. Dylan's right. If you say give them something different, we need to give them. But where is it? I mean, I've talked about this for years, Stephen. We've seen little parties come and go. We've seen people say, we want this. They tend to implode. Even this We Deserve Better, which I'm sympathetic towards, even they had their problems because people were saying, oh, yes, this group just want to go back into the status quo. They don't want to deal with this. They don't want to deal with that. They themselves began with them. NI21 imploded. Alliance hasn't grown.
Do me a favour, Alex. Stay there. I want you and Brendan McGrew to talk together. Brendan's a commentator and former special advisor. Morning, Brendan.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Is anything going to change in Northern Ireland? And by the way, maybe it shouldn't change.
Well, I listened carefully to what Alex said, and I don't disagree with a lot of what he said, but he admits himself from time to time that his natural position is one of pessimism. So Alex described a situation where, in fact, we don't deserve better because we keep on voting for the people who aren't going to do business together. But I think it's demonstrable. You know, it's very clear. I'm not yearning for some utopia which didn't exist prior to 20 months ago or prior to January 2017. But the political vacuum that we're in now, the political stalemate that we're in now, where there's no urgency from either government about getting back up and running, we're not getting big decisions taken on major infrastructure projects, we do deserve better than that. And, you know, people didn't vote for Sinn Féin and for DUP not to do business with each other. We voted for them, or people voted for them in those huge numbers, to get to a situation where we were, for example, last February, where the two of them were on the cusp of a deal that the DUP finally walked away from. And nothing has happened since then, Stephen. There's no urgency from the British government, the Irish government. Maybe everyone's preoccupied with Brexit. So I'm glad to see Naomi Long has taken some initiative. Maybe it'll fizzle out. Maybe it'll lead to something. But finally, someone's doing something. Luckily, ourselves, not relying on someone else to come in and say, well, let's get it.
As I said, Brendan and Alex, and I'll put this to you first, Alex, to Naomi, the timing of this next Monday, you know, lots of people in political circles are talking about how impactful the RHI inquiry might be in this next phase in the autumn. It starts next week. Jonathan Bell, one of the first to appear. Is there going to be anything seriously moving on while all of those accusations and political drama are unfolding in front of us? Alex.
Sorry, yes, I think it's unlikely simply because the full media attention is going to be on what happens up there, particularly because it is Jonathan Bell, and he promised months ago that, you know, when he would get the full truth out his side, everything. So that is going to preoccupy us. But the thing about Naomi's thing, you know, bringing people up next Monday, I think, first of all, it's not going to be a full house, but it's also worth bearing in mind the other parties involved. SDLP have some issues they want included. The DUP have some issues they want included. This notion, and I think the DUP have perpetuated it, that all the other parties would go into government tomorrow if it weren't for Sinn Féin. That's not true, Stephen. There are a lot of issues there. If you even go back to the Alliance Party position in 2016, they had an agenda, and I don't mean that in the derogatory sense, but they had a list of issues they wanted dealt with before they would go back into the executive in 2016. They couldn't agree with the SDLP and Sinn Féin, or the DUP and Sinn Féin on these issues, which is why we ended up with Clare Sugden in government. So I'm just simply, Naomi will know from personal experience, Stephen, that even dealing with these two parties from the Alliance point of view doesn't always deliver. So this notion that somehow you get them all together Monday or Tuesday next week with the RHI, even without it, Stephen, I suspect that all these parties would say, this is ridiculous, let's do government. There are huge issues in there.
Do you think, Brendan, let's talk about RHI for a moment, do you think political careers are on the line, depending on what is said at this RHI inquiry, or has the public mood passed and are they not interested in RHI anymore?
Well, it's interesting, Stephen. Towards the end of the last phase of the inquiry, as we headed into the summertime, I'm only thinking then, my God, if the February deal had worked and had been sold and the institutions were up and running, they would have come under enormous pressure because of the type of evidence we were hearing around May. During time, there'd be questions, there'd been emergency questions, oral question time within the Assembly would have been fraught. And it would have, in fact, put enormous strain on the executive because the detail and the level, the significance and the seriousness of the allegations being levied and the evidence we heard then was so serious that in a normal, regular functioning democracy, absolutely, political careers would be on the line without a shadow of a doubt. And it seems from the speculation and people are wondering, will we hear some even more set of more serious and more significant evidence as we head into the autumn time and winter time here? So normally speaking, if we had an assembly to be impacted, it would be very vulnerable. If we had political careers to be ended, they would be very vulnerable. We don't have those things. And, you know, RHI is next week. Then we move into October, November, the party conference season. Then people say, well, what's the point in talking before March because it's Brexit? Something we've lost another year. And there's never a right time to begin a talk process. So let's do one now.
Alex, Brendan talks about a normal democracy. Just to get your reaction, Alex, to something I touched on earlier, that would it happen within any normal democracy, and does it happen often for a political party because they don't like a programme's political coverage to boycott it for over a year? Now, the Nolan Show is very lucky that we have hundreds and hundreds of calls every single day of the week. We've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of listeners. That's what's most important to this show. But is that normal? We've got multiple sources within the DUP, Alex, now coming to us saying, look, they really want their voice heard, they want to come on the programme, and the DUP is insisting on a boycott.
Well, that's a fair point, Stephen. I spoke to somebody quite recently about this, a member of the DUP, a friend for many, many years, and he was saying, people are saying to him, oh, Nolan hates us, and social media and all, people hate us. And I said, you know, son, it would be easier if we could get on, because the best way, there's no point, you might say something or somebody else might say something, well, actually, I don't think the DUP really does mean it, or that's how they think. And he said, admitted to me quite, he said, it would be better, Alex, if we had some of our better people who are very capable going on to Nolan and saying, well, hold on just a couple of second minutes, Stephen, this is actually how the party reached this decision, this is our policy. So I think in that sense, it's stupid. It's normal, Brendan will know this as well, he and I both come from those sort of backgrounds. Not if a party should try and control an agenda. If one of your members is invited on, you try and brief and you try and say, look at those keywords and get that policy mentioned, put that dig in there. So that's normal. But I do find, and it happens everywhere, it happens with the Conservatives, Labour, it happens with all parties, they try and control the media agenda.
Will they not be controlling us?
That's what I'm saying, Steve. I think it is a ridiculous, you know, the only thing in one sense that will control you, and I think they probably some of them thought this might happen. I think some Sinn Féin thought it might happen as well. That if they had this boycott or tried to control you or control who was coming on, that somehow your audience figures would collapse and people would stop being interested. Oh, Nolan's not the programme to go to anymore. If you want to kill someone in this business, that's how you do it. Oh, you'll know, David, audience figures are king in all of this. So if your figures were collapsing, if nobody was involved, if you weren't getting the callers, if the commentator's actually not worth it all anymore, nobody listens, none of that's happening. So I think from their point of view, from Sinn Féin and the DUP, I think it's a ridiculous policy.
Someone said to me last week, and again a different person then said to me yesterday, Brendan, that actually when they look at what's happened in the RHI coverage so far, we were too soft on our analysis of what happened. But let's let the RHI inquiry conclude and make its conclusions.
Yeah, I think it's totally wrong. It's very clear the policy of the DUP is not to come onto your show. I think it's totally wrong. I think it's sort of Trump type politics where he picks and chooses the media to whom he talks. But they figure that they won't suffer because of it, and they're not suffering because of it. But that doesn't make it right. And the RHI inquiry, you know, would it have happened without the media investigations around it all? The simple answer to that is no, because in fact it has been through assembly committees and Stormont. The issues have been raised and sort of set to one side already by the various political parties. And it was only when the media scrutiny reached its height, led by your show and the two key interviews in the one day, all of that, let's face it, all of that brought about the public inquiry, which has led to a drip feeding of some quite devastating information and devastating facts around not just political representatives and how they carried on, and special advisors behind the scenes, but some civil servants as well. But that wouldn't have happened without the Irish News stuff and your stuff and Sam McBride stuff.
Look, I think
that's all playing an absolutely crucial part.
I think, and I want to bring lots of calls on now, but I think it is just an opportune moment, therefore, for me to say to all of the public of Northern Ireland, look, if any political party wants to boycott this programme, they are essentially boycotting your access to them through this programme. That's what the media is for. I am not paid the vast sums of money that I am paid to be on their Christmas card list. I am not paid to be their friend. I'm paid to be your friend. I'm paid to fight for you. I am not paid to fight for them. What we will do is we will be fair. We will be as fair to the DUP and Sinn Féin and any other party as we always have been. And that will not change no matter what political strategy they take. And I just want you to know, all of the public to know, that while, for example, the DUP do not come onto this programme, I'm probably hearing more from more of the politicians within that party, of all of the different opinions and fights and battles within that party. So all of that information is coming from to us, and our job is to bring it to you, and we will continue to do that impartially and fairly. And I promise you that no matter what any political party tries to do to this programme, we will stand up tall and we will bring you the information that you deserve, no matter how they try to punish us. John and Ballyclare. Morning, John.
Good morning, Stephen. Well said there. I totally agree with you there. They must have something to hide. This is the impression they're given. You know, by not coming on, they must be scared of your questions that they can't answer them. There must be something that they're ducking, that they're hiding anyway. But that's not what I'm on
about.
Don't
forget, John, just on that point, and it's very flattering and thank you, but don't forget that my questions, hopefully, are your questions.
Absolutely.
Don't forget that when a politician's being accountable, they're not actually being accountable to the BBC. They're being accountable to the public. Now, they are going on other programmes. That's for them to decide. But if they don't want to come on the biggest radio phone-in show in Northern Ireland, which gives them access to the public, then you can determine why.
Well, I have determined that, and I know why. Anyway, I've been an Ulster Unionist voter for the last 47 years. I'll not be voting again for any of them. They're an absolute disgrace. Every single one of them. They're sitting in there taking their full pay, what we are paying for, the taxpayers paying for. They're taking their full money. I hear Naomi Long on there. I don't know where she's still there or not.
She's gone.
She's taking her full pay.
She's calling for a pay cut, is the irony there.
Of course she is. That's crying wolf. Tell her to stand up to the mark next week. Stand up to the mark and hand her money back and say she doesn't want it. Along with Colm Eastwood, stand up to the mark, put their money where their mouth is, stand up to the mark and give the money back and say they don't want it, and lead by example instead of criticising it and still taking the money. Anyway, that's one of my issues.
You're frustrated, John.
Yes, I am indeed. They're an absolute disgrace. Listen, they're arguing here about.
Why do you think they get so many votes then?
They're arguing here about an Irish Language Act and about gay rights, which I have no problem with any of the two of them. But there's other issues here that we need to get sorted. I was visiting someone there in Musgrave Park Hospital there 2 weeks ago. It's a Victorian hospital. It's a disgrace. I couldn't believe it. I haven't got over it yet. And there's no money going into it. Why is that not a priority? Why is an Irish Language Act and gay rights more of a priority than a hospital? Explain that. Tell our politicians to explain that to me.
Well, of course, you do have people running the health service now. It's a civil servant. It's a man called Richard Pengelly. Yeah. He's at the top. So it's not that you don't have anybody. You've now got a civil servant running it. Yeah. Maybe a civil servant running the health service is better
than
some type of minister.
Is he allowed to spend money on it? Is he allowed to spend money?
No, at the moment they can't make new policy decisions.
That's what I'm saying. You know, I challenge you to take Vinnie and yourself and go up the road there and take a walk around Musgrave Park Hospital.
Vinnie's in Magaluf.
And then come back and tell me what you think. You tell the listeners what you think then.
Do you know the other question I would ask this morning?
Yeah.
if this political vacuum, we're 590 days into it this morning, if this political vacuum had happened in England, would it have been tolerated this long?
Absolutely not. Karen Bradley would have been gone for a start.
Would Karen Bradley be able to just stall and stall and hint to the public and go on a go slow about cutting their pay and hint and not do it and all of that? Why are we any different then than England?
Listen, I can't answer that. It's just different. But here's our politicians, they complain about it, but they'll not do anything about it. They're still taking the money. They're still taking it. And there's Naomi and Colin. We both complain about it, but they'll not do anything. Stand up to the mark. Stand up and be counted. Give the money back and lead by example, and then that'll put the pressure on the rest of them.
John, thank you. Pauline in Newton Abbey. Morning, Pauline.
Morning, Stephen. Your previous caller there referred to the situation in Musgrave Park. I have been on the list for surgery there for quite a while. I have been told that although I am an urgent case, the waiting time is now 16 months. I had a conversation at my door with Paul Garvin, who was campaigning in the area.
That's DUP Paul Garvin, isn't it?
It is indeed, yes. Yeah. On the 27th of July, I just happened to... I thought, right, I'm going to nab him while he's putting out his own leaflets. And Paul guaranteed me that he would, if I emailed my details, that he would personally look at it. And he said, don't be paying for this surgery. You don't need to. Stephen, I'm paying next Thursday. I'm going privately to Musgrave or to the Ulster Independent because I can't wait any longer. I had no input whatsoever from the DUP. The email was not responded to. I rang them on two separate occasions.
Well, obviously, what we need to do is give Paul a right to reply on that. So we'll give Paul a call through the DUP office and see if they want to reply to what you've said. How much are you having to pay?
£5,000.
It's a lot of money.
Yep. I did have a call from a representative from the DUP last Thursday. Just to say that the paperwork had just been passed to him. He didn't know what had happened. There'd been a glitch. But the bottom line was that he wasn't able to help me. He said he was going to a meeting in Stormont regarding the Muckamore Abbey situation, and he would raise the issue with them. But, I mean, why Paul made so many promises to me at the doorstep leaves me absolutely and utterly mystified, because... if he told me that was the situation, that was how it was.
Pauline, I'm just slightly... Look, I want you to have a voice, and thank you for coming on the programme.
Yep.
I'm just slightly uncomfortable because I don't know Paul's version of events. Let me check out what his version of events are, and I promise we'll come back to you, if that's okay. And I hope your operation... when are you getting it, Pauline?
Next Thursday.
Well, I hope it goes okay. All right?
Okay.
I hope it goes okay. Thank you, Pauline. Stephen and Enniskillen. Morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What would you like to say, Stephen?
I agree with 100% with the gentleman from Ballyclare. I empathise with both the lady who's just spoken and the lady who spoke at the rally in Bangor last night. I was involved in the organising committee of the rally in Enniskillen, and while I was there, a gentleman who I haven't seen for a number of years told me a story which beggars belief. We have... our town, Enniskillen, has imported 4 drug people from another town in Northern Ireland. They arrived in Enniskillen with a bill which they owed the druggies where they came.
Hold on, Stephen. I think that's a story we need to check out behind the scenes before we let that unfold on a live radio programme. Again, we'll let you talk to the team behind the scenes. This is an interesting show today. Legal Minefield. Gareth. Morning, Gareth.
Hello, Stephen. I'm just ringing in to say that what we really need to do is sweep away what David Trimble would have called this novel form of government. He described it as a novel form of government, i.e. an unusual form of government. What we need to do
and
is...
call after call today saying this, call after call criticising the DUP and Sinn Féin, and then the vast majority of you will go out and vote for them.
Well, I was fortunate enough to be on Talkback last week whenever George Mitchell was on. And what I said to George Mitchell and everyone else is that these politicians are playing a game. and the rules of the game need to be changed. And I use the analogy of a game of rugby, because round about 20 years ago, the rules in rugby were changed so that it was going to be 5 points for a try instead of four. And no one looks back now and says, I wish we could have 4 points for a try instead of five. And that's where we are now. The Good Friday Agreement is in a midlife crisis. The Good Friday Agreement needs to be renewed, especially in the context of Brexit. And we've just watched the Winnie the Pooh movie quite recently, and Winnie the Pooh said to Christopher Robin, doing nothing leads to a very special kind of something.
Gareth, thank you. And William in Belfast. Morning, William.
Good morning, Steve. Just give me 40 seconds here, at least. The union's in great concern for the union. The DUP need a very, very serious makeover. And don't you be saying that people will vote for them all the time. I cast your mind back to 2010 when they lost their leader for probably less than what's going on at the moment. Now, if they don't get this makeover, our union's in serious situation. I would feel that Sinn Féin vote will stand up strong. With all the anomalies of the DUP, it's in serious, serious trouble. And the only reason why the vote is held up is the fear of Sinn Féin's past. Now, that is a warning to the unionist people of Northern Ireland. The DUP need a very, very serious makeover.
Well, you say that, but for whatever reason, and by the way, people look at the DUP manifesto, they're very clear about what they stand for, and I repeat it again, William, every time they go to an election, they get a huge endorsement from the people of Northern Ireland. 10 MPs, the most number of MLAs, a huge party that continues to dominate Northern Ireland politics.
That's where you make a fundamental error. How can you lose your leader in 2010 and say that we unionists could consistently vote for anyone?
That was 8 years ago.
I don't care. At the moment, you have that RHI, you have NAMA, you have our friend Paisley. I could go on with the litany. Now, this is very serious for the union. The one thing the DUP have against you is they're not concerned about you doing RHI. They're concerned about you never being concerned about the two murders that were done, and the chief constable said the IRA done it, and you ignored it.
We did not.
You didn't do anything about it. You don't.
That's not true.
Right? You don't pry at it what's bit, and you need to think about that.
William, thank you. Brian in West Belfast. Morning, Brian.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I've always said for a prettier programme for bringing the property, the heating scandal to the fore and so forth, but on the DUP, it's ridiculous that they are boycotting your programme, even any programme. I mean, the people pay their wages. Arlene Foster, as leader, should come on your show to answer questions from the public.
It's worse than that, Brian. You have got democratically elected DUP politicians who want a voice on this programme being prevented from speaking freely. So it's worse than that. Yeah. You've actually got members, MLAs, this is factual, MLAs wanting to tell people like you and others what they believe in. And within this democracy in Northern Ireland, the central command of the DUP is preventing those people from coming on this show to speak to people like you.
Stephen,
so look, I'll continue to do what I do.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to stop the Nolan Show in any way or shape or form. But it's people like you that don't then hear from your local DUP MLA.
Well, can I say something, Stephen? There's a meeting and a venue where I come from tonight on the problem of this new system, the road system, the bus system, the bus lanes and so forth. And people are taking control of their own problems here because the MLAs are not doing it. And I'm talking about all the parties. And I think it's just one small party is taking control of this meeting tonight about what's happening to the ordinary people, bringing their kids to school and so forth. Can't get all these, maybe trivial to them, but it's a serious problem. And the people, thank God, the people are taking some kind of control of what's happened here.
Brian, thank you. Let me see if we can squeeze Frank and Enniskillen in too. Morning, Frank.
Morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, Frank.
David, the the MLAs have to realise that it's the voters that put them where they are, and now that they're in power, they've just turned their backs on them. Without us voters, they wouldn't be where they are, and if we want something done, there's nobody there to do anything for us.
Well, are you going to vote the same way next time?
No, I'm not going to vote next time because I've lost all heart in it.
Why, Frank?
Why vote 580 days now of MLAs lining their pockets and their economy going down the drain? I work 90 hours a week just to keep afloat, and they're sitting at home doing nothing.
Well, they're doing their constituency business. They're not doing nothing.
I don't live that far from Arlene Foster, and any time I've seen
well,
her...
Well, now, Arlene Foster, we need to be careful there, because I'm sure Arlene Foster would argue that she's working very, very hard. OK, look, I say we get hundreds of calls. The lines are just going boogaloo this morning. Who says politics is boring? You really want to talk about it today. We'll take a 10 o'clock news, then we'll hear from more of you.